Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 149 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Today, really excited to have Leslie Colburn back to celebrate her 1 year sugarversary. And just for a little background, if you haven't listened to our other episodes with Leslie, she struggled with sugar addiction and the restrictive binge cycle for over 35 years. And she's finally found what works for her and has been sugar and binge free for 389 days. The Unsweetened SIO podcast and the monthly recaps have given her the support and tools she has needed to find hope and recovery. She hopes to encourage others who struggle with sugar addiction by sharing her story. Leslie is a mom, a wife, and an author. Her newest children's book, Our Good Night Prayer and You, A Reason to Celebrate, teaches children that they are a masterpiece and encourages them to let their light shine. Giving up sugar has allowed Leslie to celebrate who she is and has given her a new hope. Welcome back, Leslie.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting.
So exciting. Yes. So we are celebrating your 1 year sugarversary, which was on May the 27th. And I'm just so curious to hear how that actual day felt for you.
Well, I think you're right as far as a miracle. Like, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I tried to quit sugar, like probably hundreds of times, literally. So just to have that goal of a year and getting to the year with no sugar and no flour has just felt, it just felt like such a miracle. And the beautiful thing about it as well was that I felt like I could do it, you know, continue to do it. And I have continued to do it. So just again, the grip of that addiction is so much less that it's beyond a year now. And it feels like I like normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you feel like you can continue this pretty easily.
Yeah. There's still some things I need to work on for sure. But just to be sugar and flour free for a year after having all of those years, 35 plus years of the struggle, it's just been a miracle. Really, it has been just an answer to prayer and a gift and just so grateful.
Well, congratulations. I mean, it's such a huge, huge thing to celebrate. And I think it's such a great place to be when it doesn't feel like you're white knuckling it anymore, or that it just comes easily. I say that a lot, that abstaining completely is way easier for me than trying to moderate ever was. Have you kind of found that to be true for yourself as well?
Yeah. For so many years, I tried to do moderation, or I tried to fit that into my own boundaries when the truth is abstinence has been the only thing that has worked. The cravings aren't there. And I will say, like, I went to the store the other day to buy a Father's Day gift and, went down the candy aisle and I, you know, it did take me back a little bit, like, oh my gosh, I used to love that and love that and love that. And so there is still the background knowledge of it. But the urge isn't there. Like, I could just walk out of it, and I even bought some candy, and in the past that just wouldn't have been possible. I would have eaten the whole bag and gone back for more. And so it's definitely been such a great experience to be free of it.
And that's interesting you say that about the candy. Over 4 years, sugar and flour free, it's interesting to see what will still trigger you. And I think it's just like, there will be things that continue to, you know, my daughter had a cake pop the other day and I used to love those and I used to make them and I used to binge on them. And I just hadn't thought about it, and watching her eat it, it kind of was like, wow, like it brought back, like you're saying, just a lot of these food memories that were so strong. Not to say I was going to go and eat one or anything, but it was just really interesting to see what that brought up inside of me. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of, yeah, it's really, really crazy to me how deeply ingrained some of this is. So it's really good when you can get to that part where you can notice that and maybe even recognize it, but not be triggered by it to have that food. Where in the past, I would have had to have like had one, and then that would just been the beginning of, you know, a very long binge.
Yes, I'm the same way. I'm the same way. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, we're going to kind of reflect back on this past year for you and talk about maybe some, you know, victories, challenges, lessons learned, whatever you're kind of noticed in this past year that you really want to share and will help a lot of other people on this journey. You too kind of kept a journal of, so I think you're going to read today from your journal a little bit as you reflect back. So wherever you want to start today is good. So just let us know.
Yeah, doing a journal was one of the key things for me just to kind of keep me on track. And I didn't do it the whole year and I didn't do it every day, but when I was having a hard day or when I had a victory, I noticed that I would write down some things. And so going back just recently, I pulled some things out that I just thought, even talking to myself, my present self right now, it just reiterates the importance of the things that worked and understanding how this past year went. So just kind of validating where I was at the time and what was working and what wasn't, and keeping me on track and keeping me accountable. So the first one that I went back to was day 11. So super early on, I was just writing about, I'm noticing even at day 11, how amazed I was that I had gone 11 days, which in the beginning, it was a long amount of time. I mean, you know, you're right in the beginning of it. So starting with day 11, I wrote, "This is my 11th day of no sugar, no flour, !" It has not been super easy, but what has been the biggest help is that those are the only two things that I have eliminated. I say that like it's not very much, but it is. In the past, I've tried to cut out all dairy and carbs, including fruit, and I can go strong for anywhere from a few hours to a few weeks, and then I binge on all the sugar and carbs. I want out of this cycle, and this has been a better way. By no means easy, but I'm writing this to my future and past self. Don't give up all carbs. I feel so much better by just getting rid of sugar and flour. That means I get to enjoy fruit, cheese, yogurt, almond butter, nuts, chicken, fish, turkey, burger, popcorn, chips, guacamole, avocado, and so many other things that I enjoy. In the past, the other things I noticed that I would give up was that I would give up sugar and carbs, but replace it with protein bars that were loaded with soy and sugar alcohol. And I actually like a lot of these bars, but they really have no nutrition. And a lot of the time, if not most of the time, I still crave so much sugar. So this is what I feel is working for me at this time. And I just list this out. So number one was listening to podcasts of others who have struggled with sugar and are not eating sugar anymore. The support is amazing. I don't feel like I'm the only one and that something is wrong with me. Listening to others' stories and encouragement has taught me that I don't have to be in this by myself and that it can be overcome. There is no one right way to succeed. We are all so different in that for me, I have to completely take sugar and sweeteners out of my diet because one is too many and 1,000 is not enough. The second thing is journaling. I'm writing this to my past and future self. I want to remind her that she can do this too. She's worth this effort to be free from the grips of binge eating and restricting all of the negative thoughts that go along with that. I want to remind her that anyone else not to fall into old habits that are proven not to work. Number three was no sugar or flour, period. Completely eliminating sugar and flour is enough. I don't need to take anything else out right now. This process is going to have its highs and lows, but I can manage it if those are the only two things I eliminate. I want to remind myself that in the past, when I have been too restrictive and stopped eating carbs, dairy, sugar, fruit, alcohol, caffeine, and on, I would really be eating mostly processed bars with little or no nutrition, and I would end up binging on junk. The fourth thing was bubbly water or LaCroix. I liked having carbonated drinks. The fifth thing was plain Greek yogurt with almond butter. It just worked for me. It gave me the protein and the nutrients that I needed to make me feel full. And number six was a lot of air pop popcorn with butter and salt. And number seven was prayer. God created me to live a life free of addiction. And I just prayed a lot. Eight was protein, cottage cheese, yogurt, chicken, turkey burger, almond butter, whatever, just always having protein in my meals. Number nine, reminding myself that this is a lifestyle and not just for a while. I cannot go back to even one bite of sugar because for me, it doesn't stop there and I just can't have even one bite. And that's okay. I have to remind myself that this is better than okay. I'm a better mom, wife, friend, and kinder to myself when I am not constantly thinking about and stressing about, should I eat this or shouldn't I? Or I deserved to eat the whole bag or box or container. And then after I eat it, because I always did, feeling the effects of all the sugar and feeling gross for literally days after, both physiologically and psychologically. And then the 10th thing was no scale. My focus had to be on the behavior of not eating sugar and flour and not on losing weight. When my focus is on losing weight and I don't see the number that I want or think it should be, I give up and eat whatever I want. And it's all a vicious cycle. So those were the 10 things back on day 11 and actually all throughout the year that really helped me to stay focused and know that I could do this. So I even went back to those 10 that day throughout and reread it, because I felt like I was writing the journal for my future self. So I knew there were going to be hard days. I knew there were going to be times when I felt tempted or felt like I couldn't do it, or, you know, just had those down times. So I felt like that was a great resource.
I love that. I love that you were able to like list these 10 things already on day 11 and that you found now, you know, over a year later, that those have rang true throughout the whole time.
Yeah, so yeah. That's
really amazing. And a couple of things that you said, I mean, really resonate with me. But I think that was the most important thing of all of that was just giving up the sugar and the flour and not trying to restrict too much and do all the things and be perfect on day one. Like I did that so many times. Yes. And I think that's such a big setup for failure. And that's something that I, you know, in my group coaching too, I say, you know, we're just giving up sugar and flour. From there, everyone's journey is going to differ and look different, but especially in the beginning, I think it's just doing that is hard enough, you know, yeah. And then you can kind of experiment as you get further along in your journey. But I think for a lot of people, that is true, mm-hmm. that restricting too much actually then becomes a trigger. And it's very, very common for that addictive personality to be very all or nothing. You know, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you're either eating everything, you know, nothing, like no, if you were saying no greens, no alcohol, no caffeine, no fruit, no carbs, like perfectly, or there's no in between, or it's like a complete disaster or binge. So yeah, I think that's really good to embrace that early on. And I know I had times, and I talk about this a lot in my own story of still comparing myself to other people mm-hmm. in the beginning. It's just very common to do that. Well, Leslie also gave this up, so maybe I should. And I had to keep coming back to, nope, just do you and just do the sugar and the flour, because that is such a big change. And, you know, as I've talked to other people on the podcast now, I realize it also like it gives your body time to adapt. You know, when you're doing like too much too soon, I do think it kind of overwhelms our body a little bit. So I think being able to, you know, just give up the sugar and the flour and then let our brains, our bodies, everything adapt to it helps us for that long-term success. And it makes it more sustainable, I think, yeah. too.
Well, and the one thing I noticed too that I did differently than in the past was I gave up artificial sugar. And I think that was a key too, because in the past I would switch it out for, like I said, in this, those protein bars or, you know, the keto treats or whatever, but I don't know enough about our bodies and our, you know, brains but I don't think it could differentiate between the two. And I found myself then that's all I would eat. Like I'd crave those, or it would just be the cycle of binging on those basically. Mm-hmm. And so as I read through this, I noticed that I would crave those sometimes, or I would wonder if they were acceptable. And luckily I never went, because I had decided not to have those for the year too. I didn't go out and buy some. I'm so grateful that I didn't. I just don't think I would have had the same outcome if I would have substituted fake sugar alcohol.
100%. And there is a lot of research that those mm-hmm. have the same effect as sugar, and then sometimes are even more triggering for people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It goes back to giving up all sugar, all flour. You know, yeah. I get a lot of questions about that too. Well, do you still have agave? No. Do you still have natural sweetener? No. Do you still have artificial sweetener? No. Do you still have rice flour? No. Do you still have almond flour? No. Just no to all of it, because that was always a slippery slope for me. Yeah. And then again, you might be able to, no kind of sweetener. I know, you know, maybe I could have, I'm sure if I had rice flour, you know, that wouldn't, you know, send me off, but I still just stick to just no flour, no sugar. And it's all sugars, all flours. So in those nutrition bars, that's such a good point. I mean, those, let's use that term nutrition loosely, because it's basically like a little dessert in there. Yeah. And I was like that too, you know, with those keto, you know, we talk about this on the podcast, like ways to do keto correctly and incorrectly. And if you're doing all those keto bars and treats and stuff, it's just making your body want more and more of those kind of treats. So yeah, it's really, you have to be really careful. So I think that really helped that you just said no, you know, to all of those things. And it's interesting, with taking the nutrition bars out, you were able to sustain this. So mm-hmm. obviously there was something in there that was triggering you, because once you get all of this out of your body, it makes the cravings go away. But if you're inadvertently eating something that's still, it will kind of trigger you. And that's a good kind of experiment even along this journey and process. If you're still having, you know, a lot of cravings, it's just, again, re-examining your diet even closer. Like, what is hiding? Like reading your labels. That's always why I'm like, read your labels, read the ingredients, because there's so many times still that I've been surprised, like, really, there's sugar in this, you know, and all the different forms of sugar that there are. It's like so many different names for sugar. So another thing that I know I just wanted to bring up, because a lot of people in my group coaching talk about bubbly water too being a big saving grace for them. I just do not like it. So mm-hmm. It's for me personally, I just don't like it. But there's so many, you know, I talk about having like an elixir at night.
Yeah.
Especially for people that are trying to replace alcohol. So I had, you know, some real bubbly connoisseurs, I would say, in my group coaching, and they get really excited about, oh, you got to try this kind and this kind. And then that's kind of that treat, you know, which I still think it's so important to feel satiated and like a treat and something you enjoy. And that can be something, yeah, that works really well for people. So again, if you're feeling deprived all the time, you know, this just isn't going to be able to, you won't be able to sustain it. It's then not like the lifestyle that you were talking about too, just like, you know, kind of surrendering to, this is a lifestyle. I can't not even one bite, or else I know it's just all over. And I like that you found like the Greek yogurt with almond butter, popcorn with butter. I mean, all those things that kind of worked for you. The protein is really important. And I would add to that too, remembering to have some healthy fat, which you were doing, I'm sure, with, you know, with the yogurt and the almond butter is a great example of that. And avocados and all those things to really feel, again, satiated. And there's so much nutrients in those foods that it helps with the cravings as well. And then the last thing, like, I just love that you mentioned the no scale. I didn't know this about you. You know, I don't think we've talked about that before. I go on and on about, I'm the exact same way with the scale. And we'll tell you even now, if I got on the scale today, I haven't weighed myself since after my daughter was born and she just turned 7. But if I were to get on the scale today, I would probably be so disappointed in the number or whatever. And it might be okay for a few days, but I almost guarantee that would lead to some kind of slip that would lead possibly to a bit. It's just not worth it to me at all. So have you pretty much stuck to that no scale?
Pretty much. Yeah. I just know, I think there was a couple of times I probably stepped on it during the course of the year. And it just, like you said, it's just this rabbit hole of the negative and, well, I don't understand, or, you know, and it becomes about the number, and that's not what this is about. You know, it's more about becoming healthy in my mind and my body and my soul, and focusing on nutrition and taking care of myself. And that has nothing to do with a number for me at this time. I did go to the doctor last week, and I tried to do the old, how about we don't weigh me? And she said, well, just turn around backward, which I get it. But even that, it was just, it caused some anxiety, which, you know, I'm really trying not to have around all of this. So it is amazing how much the focus is on that.
And I have to say that they do not, you can say no. So she talked you into it, but
yeah.
You can say, nope, I don't want to be weighed today. But it's such a weird, I remember the first time I said it, I was so nervous in the waiting room once I had this information. And I was so stressed out about how I was going to tell this person that no, I would, and I've never, and that was more, I was pretty like, I, you know, it was before I'd lost weight. I was pretty heavy the first time I turned it down. And they really didn't even blink an eye. I just said, no, I don't want to be weighed today. But I think if you hesitate at all, so Leslie, I'm going to, I think next time you go to the doctor, just say, nope, I'm good. Because yeah. Even it is, it's even if you're turned around, I don't know, it's just something about it that can be, you know, I don't know. And it's just not a good overall indicator of overall health. There's just so many other factors going in there. And like you said, if we're really focusing more on what's happening on the inside, not just the outside. And there's so many people that their number looks great, but they're not healthy.
Right.
And then there's so many people that are the other way, where their number might be a little higher, but they're actually really healthy. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to remind everyone, you do not need to be weighed. I mean, I learned this from a nurse, you know, and when I had that information, I was like, oh my gosh. So I have not been weighed, and I just turn down the doctors all the time and never had anyone, you know, push back against that. So I just love it. Yeah. Well, I love that you came up with this list of 10 things that have helped and have really like stuck consistently. So mm-hmm. I love that you journaled too. That really helped me on my journey. So just people listening, these are some really good ideas, you know, journal, and then you'll have your own 10 things that really work for you. You know, it's not comparing ourselves to other people. It's not, well, you know, Leslie had Greek yogurt and almond butter, that's going to be my thing. You know, I don't like yogurt, so that doesn't work for me. So find those things that work for you, because that's the key to that sustainability and feeling satiated and not feeling deprived, you know? Because again, I think so many of us are stuck in that diet culture. And that's all about deprivation, but that's not what this is about. It's about a liberation. Right.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to us some more. I know you had some more journal entries. See, I love that. Day 11. Wow. Like already the clarity you are getting, and that's amazing. So what else did you stuck out to you?
I'm going to jump to day 86. And in this journal entry, it was more about the realization and the acceptance of the addiction part of it. And I, you know, I really tried to get my hands on any kind of information around that, because it gave me kind of just this piece, like, okay, I know what it is. I know it's legitimately an addiction. So how do I navigate that? And really that comes to abstinence. That was the key. So I write here, day 86, I've been listening to an addiction specialist, Vera Tarman, and she says that she treats addiction, period, because whether it's alcohol, heroin, or sugar, it's the behavior around these substances. Most addicts move from one addiction to another, and sugar or food being one of the last, because let's face it, food is legal, it's everywhere, and it's acceptable. You don't have to be over 18 to eat or eat in designated areas. It's how we celebrate life and connect with others. Everybody eats. It's when it becomes an addictive behavior, that's when it needs to be addressed and healed. So then I did some research and I went to verywellmind.com and it talked about the signs and symptoms of an addiction. And I'll list through them in a minute. But what I was amazed was, is that it didn't list food or sugar as a substance that is addictive. So I went through and I just listed the symptom of an addiction. And then I wrote about how it pertained to me and sugar. So I wrote, well, I would say my symptoms from sugar from the list above are, number one, an inability to stop. I have wanted and tried to stop eating sugar probably 200 times in my life. No matter how hard I tried, it really was like I couldn't. The second symptom was changes in mood, appetite, and sleep. For me, after a binge, I would be so grouchy. My kids would say, oh, mom's eating chocolate. Watch out. Like seriously, they would say that. And then I would sleep a lot. The third one was continuing despite negative consequences, emotional consequences or negative self-talk and depression, bloated, hungover, antisocial, weight gain, not to mention the negative consequences on my physical health, low energy, poor nutrition, prediabetes, high cholesterol, liver damage, and thyroid, that I would continue to eat sugar. Another symptom, engaging in risky behavior. For me, all that sugar was risky because of all of the, you know, health ramifications and my emotions and my, you know, just my mood. Another one was feeling preoccupied with the substance or behavior. For me, it seemed like it's all I would think about. Am I eating good or am I eating bad? I ate one, so I just will eat them all. I ate so much yesterday, I can't eat much today. Am I going to be able not to binge today? And on and on and on, just totally focused on it. Another symptom was losing interest in other things that I used to enjoy. And for me, after a binge, I would not want to do anything but go to bed or be home. I would just isolate. Another symptom is putting the substance or behavior ahead of other parts of life, including family, work, and other responsibilities. I absolutely did that. I would be so focused on it. Secrecy is another symptom. And for me, no one knew how much I ate or how I ate. It was a huge secret. Another symptom, using increasingly larger amounts of a substance. And for me, I would be at the bottom of a 1 pound bag of peanut M&Ms eating handfuls at a time as I stood in front of the pantry looking for the next thing, brown sugar. And I mean, just, you know, cream cheese, jelly, baker's chocolate. And my kids would have to hide their treats from me in their rooms and I would go looking for it. I mean, that was me. Another symptom, taking more of the substance than I intended. I always did. One bite was too much and 100 was never enough. And then the last symptom that I wrote down was withdrawal symptoms. And if I tried to give up sugar, I was grumpy. I'd have headaches. I would have withdrawal symptoms for sure. So that was kind of the realization and the putting it together that the addictive symptoms and how it pertained to me and sugar.
I love that you did that. This is like so beautifully well done of listing them out and then how it pertains. And this is exactly why, I mean, at some point they are going to medically recognize, you know.
Oh, food. I hope so. I hope
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Because if you go through it like you did, it's mm-hmm. just check, 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 yep. check, check, check.
And then the answer is abstinence. You know, you just cannot, because that is how that's how my body reacts to that. For me, sugar is a drug. Like, so knowing that I can't moderate, I can't just have a little, it was the answer. Mm-hmm. I'm just so grateful for it because it has given my body time to heal, and which has just been a gift.
I think that's such a good exercise to do for people, because it really probably just clicks in your head then, oh, wow. Yeah, this mm-hmm. is definitely an addiction. And this is why it's so important for me that it gets medically recognized, so that then, because like you're saying, all addiction the answer is abstinence. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're an alcoholic, they're not telling you to moderate. If you're addicted to shopping, they're not telling you to moderate. Whatever it is, gambling. I mean, it's, they're never, if it's an addiction, people recognize it makes total sense. Oh yeah. You can't.
And there's help. I feel like there's help.
Mm-hmm. And there's programs. Whereas with food, for some reason, it's like people are like, oh no, you can moderate that. And it just like makes me so frustrated because again, I thought, and I tried moderation because I thought I had binge eating disorder and I thought I had, you know, it was emotionally or whatever. Like I wanted to believe that I wasn't addicted, but when you really look through like you did and go through and you check all those boxes and you're just like, wow, like you were saying, you know, your kids even said, watch out, mom's had chocolate or they're hiding their candy from you. I mean, yeah. So this is why it's really important. And we're getting there. I really believe that we're going to see this in the next few years. And what makes me so happy is then, like you're saying, we can get the right support and help for people so they don't have to feel so alone and isolated and something's wrong. And oh my God, I'm trying moderation. What's wrong with me there? Because that's what, you know, I was told for moderation. And, you know, it can make you kind of go crazy. So until it's really out there, medically recognized. And then I just think there'll be so much more help available for people around the abstinence, because really that's what works for all addiction, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm curious, because you mentioned like your kids and how has your family reacted, supported you? What have they noticed or talked to you about if they have, you know, in this past year, have they kind of noticed some changes?
Yeah. I didn't tell them in the beginning for quite a while. I just wanted to kind of navigate it and see if I could do it. Again, I didn't, if I told somebody and I couldn't do it, you know, just that mental gymnastics in my mind. But eventually they were the ones that I told, my husband first and then my two daughters. And, you know, they are so proud of me, and they've seen this cycle of binging and restricting and the struggle of it. So they're just very happy for me. And, you know, I think one of the greatest things for our family is that before, if it came into the house, I would eat it. And so it was like this rule that we just can't have it in the house. And if it is in the house, you have to hide it from mom. And so now we can have it in the house. I know that I won't have it. I won't eat it. And so they can have it. They do not have an addictive problem like I do. And so I want that freedom for them to choose when, if they want to treat. I just think that's such a healthier mindset for them. And it's a healthier, and I feel better as a mom that they can have that choice, that it isn't like, oh my gosh, we can't have this in our house. So, you know, I think that they are aware that sugar isn't healthy and it's not nutritious, but it's also okay for them to have it in moderation. And that's what I've tried to teach them throughout their life, that moderation is a good thing but for me, it's not. But for them, it is. I think that is a healthier mindset for them at this point. So it's been really freeing for me as a mom to be able to say, yes, let's just have it, you know, and I can have it in the house now.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing from a year ago. My gosh, before it was just this, oh, you know, off limits. So,
yeah. And you think about that, like, cause I worry about my own kids. Are they going to be addicts? And then, but what are they watching? Just, you know, from your behavior. And then it's like, oh, we can't keep anything in the house. And right. It just has, these like ripple effects, throughout the family. And, you know, we still don't keep a lot, of sugary stuff in the house. I just don't want the kids to eat it, cause they get so much outside the house. I want, you know, but they know, for them, moderation is okay. I'm an addict, so I can't moderate, but for most people, yes, but no one needs to eat a ton of sugar, you know? So they know that there's no nutrition, that it tastes good. And that's about it, you know? So I educate them about that, but I also, you know, say, you know, again, you can enjoy it, but you choose and then pay attention to how it makes you feel afterwards. So,
and I do try to be very careful with my words as far as, eat for nutrition, eat for, you know, make sure that you are getting the protein. And here's why, because this is how you will feel after. This is what happens when your body is fueled the right way. But I also, you know, it's just nice to be able to have the option for them if they want it. Again, I don't want that whole restrictive mentality and, you know, just trying to give them choice in it. And like you just said, to see how they feel, how does it make you feel?
Mm-hmm. So. And I did the same thing. I think I only told my husband in the beginning, cause I was like, I was already known as the crazy mm-hmm. person trying every diet exercise yeah. program. I didn't want to have yes. that, you know, I did fall off the wagon, but yeah. how, like, when did you start? I'm just curious, like, since, you know, when did you start kind of maybe including, you know, other family members, friends, and how has that been like for you and where you are now? Are people more like, oh yeah, that's just the way, you know, Leslie eats now? Or,
you know, I really haven't told very many people. My kids are the ones that actually tell people, oh, mom doesn't eat sugar, and it's just not a big deal. I don't announce it too much. I just know that if I go out to eat or whatever, like, I feel confident enough in my decisions that I don't feel pressure for people. If they offer me something, I just say, oh, no, thanks, or I'm good, or whatever. So I don't tell a whole lot of people, which I might now, just because if other people are struggling with it, I would want to be that support and that, you know, that people shouldn't be alone. But in my immediate group of people, I just haven't shared that too much. I feel like, for the most part, in the past, I have been relatively healthy in my lifestyle other than the sugar. And that was such a secret then anyway. I guess I just haven't shared that part with many people. And so to fill them in on this, I don't know, it's pretty vulnerable, I guess, is the bottom line. It's very vulnerable, right?
Putting it out there. Yeah. But I like what you just said, and there's really no need. You don't need to, but I like how you just, you know, kind of pointed out that maybe someone else needs to hear that though.
Yeah.
That maybe they look at you, someone they thought was really healthy. They didn't know about this secret mm-hmm. side. And then they're like, oh my gosh, Leslie struggled with that too. Okay. Yeah. Like, so yeah, I think that's, and for me was, because, you know, even doing this podcast, I feel very vulnerable, but I just, again, didn't want people to feel like they were alone. And it does get a lot easier now. Like, I just kind of say, oh yeah, I don't eat that because I'm an addict. You know, I was never able to eat. And it sometimes like spurs some really interesting conversations, and some people get it, some people totally don't, but it's just something that I've just kind of, you know, share now, but not in every single situation.
Either, right.
Because you also don't want to feel like you're lecturing, you know, so it's a kind of a fine balance. Yeah.
Yeah. But that might be something that I work toward this year. And especially like even on this podcast, I feel like it's something I want to share, and it is very good for me. And I hope that it helps somebody. That's the thing. Like, people are struggling with this. Like, if I can help somebody and help them to feel not alone and give them some tools or whatever, it's worth it. Like, I do need to share it. So that you
definitely are. I mean, people listening, and that's always what I get feedback from listeners, is these stories are people's favorites. So
because it
just connects so much, makes, you know, there's always part of your story that is going to resonate with people. And it just, again, makes them feel a little less alone, because addiction yeah. can be very isolating. So yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I think that's so cool that you did that. I think I've done that, like looked at the list maybe mentally, but something powerful and writing things down. And mm-hmm. then that's something, again, you can refer back to later if there's ever any kind of question. It's like, no, this is pretty clear. I'm an addict, and here, let me list this out. So what else? I think you had another entry you wanted to share.
Yeah. So I have another entry. It's day 131. And what I like about this one is I talk about what my life was like before I gave up sugar and what that day would have looked like, but what it really was like after I gave up sugar. So I'll read this through real quick. So day 131, and I talk about struggles here. I say, while I still wish that I was able to see more results on the outside at this point, I'm still abstaining from all sugar and flour. It is so much easier to navigate what I eat and the cravings, those huge, crazy cravings, the ones that pretty much controlled me and were so defeating, are so much quieter now. I can acknowledge that it would be nice to eat something sweet, but I can just move past the thought and then move on. For example, we went to see our older girls in South Dakota this weekend. I have two older stepdaughters. We had the most amazing time. The weather was beautiful and the four girls had sisters' pictures taken together. So in the past, this is what it would have looked like. Number one, I would have wanted to and had the goal of not eating sugar because that is and was always what I strived for. Number two, I would have eaten a healthy, high protein, low or no sugar flour meal for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but would have been thinking about what I was or wasn't eating the whole time and feeling fat and bloated and insecure. So not as focused on my time with family. Number three, I would have gone to the gas station or store and bought a large amount of ice cream, chocolate, candy, junk, and then eaten the bag of peanut butter M&Ms that my husband bought for himself and still wouldn't have been satisfied. Number four, I would have eaten all of what I bought and probably all of my husband's too. Number five, I would have got up in the morning feeling like crap, maybe stayed in bed as long as possible. Number six, I would have focused on how bad I felt instead of on the time with my family. Number seven, I would have fell asleep on the way home and then raided the pantry when we got home and then fallen into bed feeling sick and lethargic. Number eight, I would have felt like crap today and not been able to hardly get out of bed. Number nine, I would have started right in on the junk food today because why not? Plus I would still have such strong cravings and urges today. And number 10, I would have felt guilt and shame. So at day 131, what really happened was this. I got up early, went for a walk with my husband, and then took our 26-year-old daughter out for a birthday breakfast. I had a keto bowl with spinach, turkey, eggs, pepper, and tomatoes, and an iced Americano, all of which I love. Number two, I enjoyed our conversation and focused on our time instead of thinking about sugar. Number three, I went for two walks in the sun with everyone. Number four, I helped my girls get ready for pictures and curled hair and played with our grandson. Number five, I went to the corn maze and watched our grandson play, went through the corn maze and wasn't self-conscious about the way I looked. Number six, I loved the time with my family and was present without the brain fog and hangover from binging. Number seven, I shared nachos with one of my daughters and loved every bite without guilt, and I got full and stopped eating. Number eight, I got a smallish bag of popcorn at the gas station on the way home, and I ate the whole thing. Number nine, I wasn't even tempted to eat the bag of peanut M&Ms that my husband bought at the gas station. Thought about what it used to be like and how that bag would have been just the start of what I would have consumed. Number 10, I stayed awake the whole 3.5 hours home from our trip. Number 11, I ate more popcorn when we got home from our trip, and I felt like it would be better if I didn't eat it, but I wanted it, so I did. Number 12, I had energy and watched a movie when we got home. And number 13, I got up this morning and got a lot of writing work done without being hungover or foggy. And then I wrote, what a difference. So even though I don't think the scale is much different, the quality of life and the quantity of life that I am living is so much more valuable.
Ooh, that is so beautiful. I love that you did that. This is, again, a really good exercise for people listening to do, because I could do that so many times now of what this would have looked like before versus what it looks like now. Is it perfect? Maybe not. Yeah. Doesn't have to be perfect, but it's so much better. Like you said, the quantity of your, or the quality of your life is so much better just by making these changes. So, I'm so glad. I love this whole actually episode of, you know, first of all, day 11 and listing out like the 10 things that really helped you, you know, along the process that was true then and still now. And then at day 86, just really the acceptance of this being an addiction and going through all of those addictive behaviors and relating them to your sugar addiction. And then coming out at day 131 and realizing even then, wow, this would be an example of this is what would have happened in the past because I've done it many times. And this is how it's different now. So I just love that so much. And probably for me, the biggest, when you're talking about you know, how it's different from it would have been is that presence with family, you know? So even though you were eating, like you had the nachos and you had the popcorn, it's still like, those are like approved treats in your head. So there isn't the like angst around it that it would have been if it had been the peanut butter M&Ms or something else. So you can still enjoy those things, but be really present, you know, with your family at the same time. Because again, there's so many times for me, if I was going out with friends or family for dinner, I could care less, honestly, who was there, what they were talking about. I was completely focused on the food. And that's been such a difference to me now of how freeing that is. I'm not worried about if the bread basket comes out. I'm not worried about how I'm going to answer when they ask if we want dessert, like where those things were taking my complete focus, or on car trips, like you said, what snacks am I going to get at the gas station? It's really incredible to kind of be able to reflect back on that and see the difference. Oh, I just so love that you did that.
Well, and it really just points me back to my why. I mean, I do have a lot of reasons health-wise, as far as like, you know, just health-wise, which are my why, but I want to be a good mom. I want to be a good wife and a good friend. And all of that entry, that journal entry just pointed me back to my why. Why am I doing this? And that, you know, it's so that I can be present and be my true, authentic, you know, self and who God intended me to be. And I feel like that so much more now than a year and a month ago. And it's, I don't always feel like that. Obviously that's the thing, you know, giving up sugar hasn't solved all of my problems. I'm not perfect, but at least I can take that, put it in its proper place in my life and be a better version of myself.
That's so good. Was there anything else that you wanted to share with us or anything that we didn't get to today as you're just kind of reflecting back on this past year?
You know, I think the thing is just to take it one day at a time. And if that's too much, take it one meal at a time. And if that's too much, take it one breath at a time, you know, take it and work through that, knowing that if you've chosen to give up sugar and flour and those things that you're addicted to, sometimes it's one breath at a time just to get to the next, but you can do it, get support. You know, even if it's journaling or just take that next step toward giving up that flour and sugar or whatever you're addicted to, that would be, you know, and sometimes I still have to, okay, just remember my why, take it one meal at a time, take it one, you know, one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's true. That's just true for everybody, you know, for all addicts too. It's never like it's over. So it's always this continuing awareness of doing the things that work for you to stay on. And when you feel yourself struggle a little bit, recorrect and get back in. You know, it's just a very delicate balance that you learn to live. And instead of those extreme ups and extreme downs that we all felt when we were addicted, it's just, yeah, life's not perfect, but it's a little more even, you know, it's not this up and down. It's a little more in balance is how I feel.
Yeah. And I know I've shared with you, I just lost my stepdad, in January, you know, and he was my dad, really. He was with me since I was six. And it's heartbreaking, you know, that grief. And I am so grateful that I wasn't in the grips of sugar for that, because I don't know. I know where that would have taken me, just down the spiral of trying to self-soothe with it and trying to cope with sugar. And that just makes the things worse. You know, I think it exacerbates depression and just any kind of health things, just and feeling so low. So, you know, I am so grateful that I was 6 months into sobriety before we lost him. I feel like I was able to cope a little bit better and not have that add on top of the hard things.
And actually feel your emotions instead of eat them and numb them, even though it's really painful when these things happen, but it's still so much better to feel them and process them, you know, rather than, you know, get everything stuck inside and just cause pain for a really, really long time. So yeah, that's also really interesting for you to be able to see.
Yeah. And I, you know, like I said, it is a process. I know that over the year I have struggled with, okay, am I using popcorn and chips as a, you know, am I using them in the same way that I was using sugar? And sometimes I could say, yes, absolutely. I'm eating the whole bag. You know, it's taking the place of nutrition. And so, you know, I have to work through that too. And still I might have to take that one meal at a time or one breath at a time as I move forward with this. But for now, I still feel like I don't want to restrict too much. I don't want to fall back into that cycle. And I've had to remind myself of how far I've come and that is still so amazing. And if I'm not ready to give up the chips and that kind of stuff, that I've still come so far, and I have to constantly remind myself of that too. So I would just say that if anybody else is feeling that way, like, you know, evaluate those things, but remember how far you've come. And that last journal entry of mine is such a great reminder of what I used to be like and now what it is like. So yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing, and congratulations again. I'm so glad that we've been a part of your journey, and I know we'll continue to check in with you next season, and just because I just love all the growth that happens. I think in that first year is really big, but it continues every year. I'm just amazed at the more what comes up, and so I can't wait for you to share more with us. And I just really appreciate
you so much for everything you've done. I mean, honestly, your podcast, God just gifted it to me. It was like what I needed right then. It was just an answer to prayer. And your story and your daily journals, and just, you were my support. So yeah. I'm so grateful.
I love that. And that means so much, because that's why I do this. Yeah. But I appreciate your vulnerability. And I know everyone listening really appreciates that too, because that's how we really connect and help each other, mm-hmm. is by being, you know, a little bit vulnerable and sharing these stories and just realizing no one is alone in this. This is really, and that's, I think, the biggest gift for people is just, you're not alone. And there's so many people, like I always say, if I could do it, like, I feel like I'm the most sugar addicted person in the world. I test off the charts. If I can do it, like, anyone can do it. So, well, thank you so much. Can't wait to check in with you next season.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day, and remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.